It's not only news, it's science breakthroughs. Tomorrow's technologies. Advanced medical techniques. It's a glimpse into the future where we discuss artificial intelligence, earth and energy, enhanced humans, future society, health and medicine, space, robots and machines. Welcome to Science Bites with Joe and Craig.
Today is Thursday, October 15, 2020. For the past several episodes, we've been discussing vehicles using hydrogen as a fuel source. Last week, Toyota announced that it would officially develop a hydrogen fuel cell-powered electric semi-truck.
The Japanese carmaker's North America division will be partnering with Hino USA, a commercial vehicle manufacturer, to produce the heavy Class 8 fuel cell truck specifically for the North American market.
The truck itself uses the existing Hino XL series chassis provided by Toyota's fuel cell technology.
Toyota plans to show off the first demonstration vehicle in the first half of 2021, but we still know little about it. The prototype of a prior initiative called Project Portal 2.0 may provide some clues. Revealed in 2018, the prototype was a 670-horsepower semi with 1,325 pound-feet of torque and a towing capacity of 80,000 pounds. Its fuel cells gave it a reported range of 300 miles.
Craig, it's a strange time to announce plans for a hydrogen-powered semi. Tesla's competitor, Nikola Motors, landed in hot water last month after an investigation revealed the company might have misled their shareholders with its demonstration of a fuel cell-powered Nikola One semi-truck back in 2018.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a little bit of a scandal back then. So fuel cell cars are very similar to traditional gasoline-powered vehicles. Fuel cell electric cars have a driving range of more than 300 miles on one tank of hydrogen fuel. They can refuel in just minutes, and the fueling experience is almost identical to a gas station.
Yeah, one of the key things is knowing what that hydrogen is going to cost.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know what the cost is actually going to be. But as cool as future car fuels are, Joe, I think our next topic is really incredible.
Yeah, you're right. While nations are spending billions building football-sized nuclear fusion reactors, a 12-year-old kid from Memphis, Tennessee, just became the youngest person ever to achieve atomic fusion.
With just hours left before he turned 13, Jackson Oswald managed to fuse two deuterium atoms in a fusion reactor he built. It wasn't built in a lab or a warehouse or other facilities, but in his family house. That is just so incredible. According to Jackson, he was the only person who worked on the reactor during both the design and production stages.
You know, Craig, Jackson told the Guinness Book of World Records that his fusor temperatures is approximately 100 million degrees Kelvin. And for those who may not know what Kelvin is, let me explain. The Celsius and Fahrenheit scales were both built around water, either a freezing point or a boiling point, or some combination of water and chemical. Scientists used the Kelvin temperature scale because they wanted a temperature scale where zero has no thermal energy.
He was able to use electricity to accelerate two atom deuterium together so they fused into an atom of helium-3 isotope, which also releases a neutron, which can be used to heat up water and turn a steam engine, which in turn produces electricity. Jackson also said he was inspired by Tyler Wilson, the previous record holder at age 14. In an interview with Jackson's mother, she explained that there were a few moments during the project that she had some reservations and would be Googling things before he turned on various stages. What, Joe, what an amazing story and an incredible kid. Can you imagine the brain he has?
Yeah, and he's a 13-year-old Einstein. If he could accomplish this now at 13, who knows what he'll do by the time he turns 80?
For real. Hey, remember when we discussed that mycelium coffins?
Oh, yeah, I do. That was last week, and it was your favorite part of the show.
It was the favorite part of my show. Well, we have mycelium again. A startup company called Bolt Threads uses a special kind of fiber made from mycelium, which is the thread-like roots of mushrooms. So they used these mushrooms to create a vegan leather-like material called Mylo. Some of the most prominent clothing brands in the world, including Adidas, announced they would be partnering with Bolt, investing significant amounts of money in the company to eventually create hundreds of millions of square feet of this unique material.
The first Mylo products will go on sale sometime next year. The fashion industry remains the most polluting sectors in the world. By growing its material from mycelium, Bolt is hoping to offset some of the environmental impact.
The first step is to grow mycelium, the mushroom roots whose fine strands, they kind of spread out in all directions to form a cohesive web. In less than 2 weeks on a bed of sawdust and other organic material, and with controlled temperature and humidity levels, the woven mycelium's resulting thick sheets are then processed, tanned, dyed, and embossed into the finished leather-like material according to the brand specifications. Mycelium production uses half the volume of what are needed for cotton production and uses no animal products. That's a really amazing material.
Some of the animal leather supporters say that the traditional industry acts as a waste system for skins and hides, otherwise headed for landfills from beef production. Unfortunately, the curing and tanning process is often toxic, and there is a growing association of the minds of consumers between raising cattle and our climate crisis. For brands that face scrutiny around the fashion industry, environment's footprint, the interest in Mylo is obvious.
Bolt Thread's other primary and initial product, an artificial spider silk thread called Microsilk, has previously been used in capsule collections and collaborations with designers. But that yarn isn't at a place yet where it can compete with the fabrics like polyester on a price and performance. By contrast, mushroom leather can compete on both price and industrial demand. It is also far closer to market readiness, a proposition that was given a boost earlier this month in research published by the University of Vienna.
Okay, it's time for a short break.
We're building the next chapter of American exploration, returning to the moon to stay, so we can go beyond to Mars. To expand what's possible and further our understanding. The architecture for these missions is already taking shape. We will go with new systems, bold designs, and a sustainable mission. You can hear it, taste it, touch it. We are going. We are training, testing, pressing our pioneering spirit into every component. Defining our resolve with every line of code, and securing our success with every welcomed partnership. This is not hypothetical. This is not about flags and footprints. This is about sustainable science and feeding forward the advance of the human spirit. Because we are the pioneers, the star sailors, the thinkers, the visionaries, the doers. And because we stand on the shoulders of giants to go farther than humanity has ever been, we will add our names to the rolls of the greatest adventurers in history. Every day, every mission, we advance this call. We are NASA. And after 60 years, we're just getting started.
Welcome back. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, known as DARPA, just handed out a $14 million contract to develop a test and nuclear thermal space propulsion system.
The concept is simple. An onboard reactor generates heat, which is pushed through a nozzle to produce thrust. The company Graphene Technologies is meant to support DARPA's demonstration rocket for Agile Cislunar Operations Program, essentially a project investigating whether the extreme temperatures produced by nuclear reactions can be used as a propulsion system.
According to DARPA, NTP system offers both 10,000 times the thrust-to-weight ratio compared to the electrical propulsion, with the amount of 5 times the efficiency of a chemical propulsion.
The agency hopes nuclear thermal propulsion will allow the U.S. to keep up with maintaining space domain awareness in cislunar space. NASA is eyeing a similar system for propelling its own spacecraft. Last year, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine called NTP a potential game changer for the agency, with the potential to revolutionize space travel and enable trips to and the eventual settlement on Mars.
Such a propulsion system could allow for artificial gravity during such long trips to outer space. According to NASA's research dating back to 2014, artificial gravity will address the health concerns surrounding long-term exposure to zero gravity.
Well, let's just stay on the nuclear topic for a moment, because last week the Russian military successfully launched a hypersonic atomic missile called the Zircon missile. The rocket was launched from the White Sea off Russia's coast and successfully hit its target further north in the Barents Sea. With the successful launch, which Russian President Vladimir Putin described as quote-unquote big event for Russia, it seems we've now entered the era of operational nuclear weapons that fly too quickly to block.
Last December, Russia announced that their Avangard hypersonic launch vehicle that can fly 27 times the speed of sound and evade anti-missile systems is fully operational.
That's pretty scary.
Yep.
The brief Russian announcement didn't mention the Avangard by name, but assuming it was used in the launch, it would seem that there is now tangible evidence that the world's first new class of weapons is working as described.
For now, details remain scarce. Putin said in 2019 that the Zircon could travel 620 miles and 9 times the speed of sound.
President Putin said in a news briefing that equipping the armed forces with the latest unparalleled weapon systems will certainly ensure their country's defense capability in the long term.
In response to Russian successful tests, the U.S. Space Development Agency is seeking more than $11 billion to deploy up to 1,200 low-orbit satellites to monitor and target hypersonic weapons.
The satellites are part of an initiative called the National Defense Space Architecture, meant to keep tabs on new types of hypersonic weaponry developed by both Russia and China. In the agency's words, the money will go towards delivering unmet priorities needed to prevent adversaries from gaining a military advantage over the United States.
The 1,200 satellites will eventually form 7 layers of constellations. The majority of the budget will enhance the existing data communication satellites that will form the Constellation Networks Foundation.
I don't know, Joe. All this nuclear stuff at these fast speeds, it just makes me nervous.
I know. You know what's wrong? It's probably moving faster than I can think.
Oh, man.
Okay, we're going to take a small break, and when we return, we'll have another bite for you.
What makes a rainbow bend? Where does the universe end? To know the world from A to Z,
discover science and technology.
Where is the dinosaur? What's on the ocean floor? To know the world from A to Z,
astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology, science and technology.
It's fun, you'll see. Why is the sun so warm? What makes a winter storm? And what's a quadruped? Why is the planet Mars red? You'll find there's lots to know, and exploring as you go. To know the world from A to Z,
discover science and technology. Astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology, science and technology. It's fun, you'll see.
A public service message from the National Science Foundation.
Welcome back. You can help NASA's newest planet hunting mission do its work. The space agency just launched a citizen science project called Planet Patrol, which asks volunteers worldwide to sort through images collected by the satellites known as TESS.
Automated methods of processing TESS data sometimes fail to catch imposters that look like exoplanets. The human eye is extremely good at spotting such imposters. NASA needs citizen scientists to help them distinguish between the lookalikes and genuine planets. I think this is something really good, Joe, for like senior citizens and stuff.
Oh, I know. Well, TESS entered Earth's orbit in April 2018. The spacecraft searched for aliens' worlds using the transit method, like the ones found in my backyard. Noticing the tiny dips in the stellar brightness caused by the planets crossing their host stars' faces.
That's so funny. And now there's Planet Patrol, The new online project, a partnership involving NASA, the SETI Institute, the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, and the citizen science collaborative platform Zooniverse. Asking volunteers questions about test images of potential exoplanets, their answers will help mission team members to narrow down candidates for the follow-up vetting.
Planet Patrol currently focuses on the test images. The project will eventually include light curves, if all goes according to their plan.
If you are interested in helping out, go to the Planet Patrol website or Planet Hunters Tests.
Or aliens in Joe's backyard.
What do aliens look like, Joe?
Well, it depends. My neighbors look like one.
So well, they're not little gray men with big dark eyes and little nostrils?
No, they're crabby neighbors with big ears.
And messy hair.
Yeah. That brings us to the close of another show. You can find our shows on our website, MySciencePites.com, and on all podcast platforms.
Joe and I are grateful to you, our listeners. Let us know how we're doing by leaving a review and giving our show a 5-star rating. It really helps move up our rating so more people can find us. Because of your continued support, our show is now available in 18 countries. Thanks again for listening, and we will be back next week with another new episode.